Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 27th day of November, 2013. Well, the marketplace is in holiday mode, and the December crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates are just around the corner. But it may be January that holds the key to the next big move in the marketplace. We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Purdue University Extension ag economist Chris Hurt. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett from Total Grain Marketing, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets, and Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com. And by ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's begin with this question for you, Matt Bennett. I want to know a couple of things. First, is the basis for corn staying at this time stronger than you might have expected?
Yeah, I really think so. I mean, this has been an interesting year to me in that we have kind of chugged through this harvest, and while we weakened basis just a little bit a couple of times, we actually strengthened from start to finish, and it's, you know, obviously a very big crop. And so, you know, locally we're running, you know, 6-8 cents under, which to me is just awfully strong. And looking forward, you know, I would think that this thing's going to have to weaken up whenever people start really having to sell. But going in as empty as what we were, I guess I'm not terribly surprised basis was strong. But to get better and better as the fall went on is a little bit of a surprise to me.
Elaine Cubb, this is not something new, at least over the last 4, 5, 6 years, as the ethanol has been ramped up, but that has leveled out. Why do you suppose the marketplace is bidding so strongly for corn?
Well, I think even Matt's basis answer is a key to that. I mean, I think that folks have built up the storage. Farmers are. They have some power in this market not to release the supply unless they see a price that they like. So the ethanol plants, for instance, they can make money at these prices. There's about a 70-cent spread between RBOB and ethanol on the futures boards right now. So there's money to be made, and there's room for them to be bidding up. And we've seen that in the EIA report today, that week on week and month on month, the production levels have continued to grow.
And Bill Mayer, just as a reminder, this program is being recorded on a Wednesday afternoon in front of the Thanksgiving holiday. Bill, when you take it all into account, what does it mean as you try to help producers market the cash crop?
Well, I think these guys have hit on a couple of good points. There are several reasons why the basis is strong. The most important one is because the farmer is not sold during harvest the amount of grain, percentage-wise at least, that he normally does. And as a long, strung-out harvest, we're still harvesting and, you know, we're getting pretty much through the first quarter. But I think that's the key as to the marketing, is when the farmer does decide to let go of some grain, and that's when I think, you know, you don't want to be the last one out the door. It's hard to be the first one out sometimes, but you want to get ahead of that if you think that we're going into a period like January, maybe towards February, where some cash movement's going to take place.
Do you suppose there will be times between now and, let's not get too far into the planting season, but because of the way basis is acting now, that the marketplace may have to bid for corn more energetically than maybe we would have thought with a 1.8 billion bushel carryout, Bill?
I think the key to that is probably the fund position. The funds are very short in the marketplace, and I think to get the futures driven up higher. I think we probably need to see some short covering from the funds part of it. The basis is, you know, from a cash standpoint, that's trying to do the job right now.
Elaine, your same assessment?
Yeah, Bill, I mean, he pointed out correctly that the funds are short on corn, but they're actually very net long on beans, to switch gears here a little bit. They have about six times as many long positions as short positions. So particularly as we're going into this December time frame when they're going to be liquidating positions and squaring out their books before the end of the year, I am exactly on board with Bill, expecting to see some upward influence on the corn price from that liquidation, but possibly some, you know, lower pressure on the soybean market from that same influence of them liquidating their long positions.
So I will ask each of you to answer this next question, and we'll start, Matt, with you. Do you suppose producers should sometime between now and the end of the year, as long as they don't have a tax problem, make a cash grain sale for corn?
Well, I think a lot of it obviously depends on what their situation is. Guys that are sitting on a large amount of bushels, I've definitely recommended to them to enter into some sort of strategy, whether it be to sell some cash and maybe buy a cheap call, because calls are awfully cheap, or maybe sell the carry. You know, there's some different things that you can do, but to me, I don't want to have all my eggs in one basket. I certainly don't want to go into the January time frame, especially when the market is, I think Bill pointed out, is really doing everything it can to fry these bushels away through basis levels. You know, to me, I really don't want to be caught going into January with a large amount of bushels, either unsold or unprotected. So I definitely would be looking to do something from a risk management perspective, if nothing else.
Elaine Cubb?
Well, exactly. I mean, I think you've either got to make a really long gamble here and aim for the March time frame for a sort of seasonal high in the spring, or get something done here before the first of the year in a crush of cash bushels. Buying the calls is certainly one option, and I think that looks particularly attractive if you've got some sort of local deal, if somebody's offering you, if you've still got wet grain that you don't want to dry and somebody's offering you a really good drying charge. I mean, this was more of an argument for the past couple of weeks, but I think it's been a good strategy to be getting rid of that cash grain that you don't want to manage or you don't have space to manage, and if you are bullish on the markets going forward, you can do that on the board and not worry about handling the cash grain itself.
And Bill Mayer, cash sales before the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it depends on the current situation that the producer's in and how much he's sold up to this point. But I think we'll have an opportunity to do that. And if we do get an opportunity, we have to, you know, evaluate. The opportunity may not be as big as what we're used to in the past couple of years. I think it's probably a good idea to shoot for trying to get something done at least before that, you know, in the January period.
Now, speaking of things that need to be done, and I don't know that this is the case, Bill, but I want to check in with you, since Strategic Farm Marketing does a substantial amount of crop insurance. Are there things that producers can do, different products, beyond what is offered by the United States Department of Agriculture and the Farm Service Agency and RMS, that producers should take advantage of or at least consider at this time?
Yeah, there's a lot of products, a lot of new products out there, Todd. In fact, there's, you know, products that you can look at and see whether you want the January, February, or March price, whichever is highest. There were some, you know, December, January, February, March, and even some that did the 5 months of November, December, January, February, March. There's some that you can actually look back and get a higher price from past months. So you can, there's some possibilities of adding some levels of protection from the just strictly the February price. You never know, the February price may end up being the best one of the bunch, but there are some, you need to look at them, evaluate them, and see which one's the right one for you.
Matt, do you think from the farmer's perspective that these extra products, add-on products, are worth a second look?
Well, I think with the volatility in the market here in the last several months, a lot of guys are going to be willing to look at certain things like that. But then on the other side of it, I think one thing a lot of producers have told me is that, you know, they feel as though crop insurance levels at these prices could end up only maybe, you know, giving them a break-even type scenario. And so, obviously, guys don't want to go in with no insurance at all. But I just think guys are a little bit more hesitant to spend a whole lot extra right now because they don't feel really good, you know, whenever we're looking at a dollar less for a spring guarantee than what they got last year.
And then may I ask you, Elaine, about the fundamentals of the marketplace. What do you see that might be friendly and or bearish, it doesn't matter which one, mostly to the marketplace, fundamentally, ethanol, exports, domestic feed usage, what types of things?
Well, I'm going to actually look internationally here to get, you know, the things that are going to influence the market fundamentally for the next few months. I mean, South American weather, this is absolutely the time frame for us to be watching day to day what their rainfall totals are. And it has not been a major concern yet. This has not been something that's been adding, you know, a really strong trend to either the soybean or the corn market. But we know that there are fewer corn acres planted in South America this year, many, many bean acres. They have a strong possibility that Brazil is going to grow more soybeans in 2014 than we did in 2013 for the second year in a row. That's not the official projection yet, but it certainly could happen. So those are the things that I would watch right now. I think we're in a weather market, and we just tend to forget about it because our own fields, you know, are sitting idle at the moment.
Things that tend to be forgotten about sometimes, Matt Bennett, are the soybeans that are in the bin. What should producers be considering?
Well, my opinion on the beans, the price level is extremely good, especially for most of the producers that I deal with. Considering their yield levels, it's awfully tough not to go ahead and look at selling $13-plus beans. I mean, there's some really good basis levels if you look around. A lot of the places on the river, you know, have been offering, you know, pretty darn good deals that we could even truck clear from, you know, where we're at, an hour and a half, 2 hours away down in St. Louis. Some of our producers that haul their own, you know, have been looking at doing some things like that. And so, to me, $13-plus beans with guys that are looking at 55 to 65 bushel per acre average yields, to me, is kind of a no-brainer. And so if they, you know, if they don't want to go ahead and sell them, I certainly would be doing something from a risk management perspective, just simply because, you know, with what Elaine was talking about earlier with some of the funds unwinding, boy, it could be a situation where, you know, you could end up a dollar lower in a couple, 3 days and not know what hit you. And I just hate to see guys let it get away from them.
Elaine, I'll let you follow up on that. Sales of soybeans before the end of the year or above 13 bucks should be made or not?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of pressure on this market and a lot of influences that can keep putting pressure on it. China, we saw China canceling sales today. They have historically not done everything in their, they have done everything in their power to keep from buying beans, you know, very high above that $13 price. So when we've got it here this past couple of months, this has absolutely seemed like a good opportunity to be selling.
And Bill Mayer.
Yes.
Short
I think
enough.
At those levels, you should be at least cashing your beans in. If you want to own beans, I think you're set up in the market where you've got lower futures prices further out than you do nearby. Is a perfect opportunity to come in and buy calls if you want to, you know, if you want to have some ownership in the market after you sell the cash.
Bill, what do you suppose would be the reasons fundamentally behind that? We've talked about the South American bean crop. Do you suppose that it will be in that good a condition? Will China switch their imports of beans from the United States or North America to South America, those types of things?
Yeah, I think we'll see eventually. Well, we have to see. Right now we're in a situation where, you know, we're coming in to be the equivalent of, you know, midsummer in the, you know, the United States harvest down in South America. So we need to get a little bit further down the road to see if conditions continue to be good. But once we get to that point, I think the sales will, you know, the exports will switch to South America. China will come in and buy from them and probably cancel some of the purchases they made from us. And I think we'll also see some increase in bean acres here as well during that same time frame, you know, as far as what farmers plan to plant.
Elaine, I'd like you to take up end users, livestock in particular, for a moment. Are they going to be in an expansion mode for beef cattle?
Yes, I think absolutely. Price-wise, you know, beef is the place to be. And I, you know, I'm particularly supportive of that from a diversification standpoint, particularly out here in the Western Corn Belt. So I'm out in South Dakota at the moment. And these are the opportunities, you know, to make sure that you're not, you don't have all your eggs in one basket and aren't reliant on this corn price that is near the break-even cost of production where you're not going to be making the profits perhaps that we've made the past 5 years. Perhaps your best profit opportunities, or at least your most diversified profit opportunities, would be to go into the livestock. So I absolutely think there is an incredible appetite to be going back into the cow-calf operations. We see the feedlots are very eager to be buying what's scarce supplies of calves there are out here. So absolutely, we are in a state of expansion.
Okay, Matt, you're a farmer and you do have a herd. I'm wondering, would you expand that herd, and is it easy for producers to get into at least the beef cattle market?
Well, I think that, like Lane was saying, obviously it's kind of tough to come across buying feeder calves right now, kind of tough to really expand your cattle herd in any way unless you've got a little bit of money in your pocket. Cattle are a pretty good commodity right now, and as far as do I want to expand or not, I've been expanding for the last couple, 3 years, kind of looking at this as an opportunity maybe to make some money on the cattle market after seeing the drought in Texas and things that have happened. I just felt like cattle would be good property to own. But I'll tell you this, you know, out here in a lot of places in your major corn producing areas, there's not a whole lot of pasture around. So, you know, just locating place to have a cattle operation really isn't always the easiest thing to do. So I'm pretty well maxed out where I'm at, but I do think that they're good property to own by all means.
You're listening, of course, to Commodity Week. This edition was recorded on Wednesday, November the 27th. Our panelists in studio include Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois, whom you just heard, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets from Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Bill Maher of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. When we come back, we'll talk with Purdue's Chris Hurt.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. It's planting season, and planting conditions have been very good across Brazil and have improved across Argentina. The only significant weather issue of note so far occurred back in September and October at the beginning of planting season. That's when a long stretch of dry weather across Argentina caused corn planting delays. In fact, some acreage will likely switch from corn to soybeans. More recently, getting corn in the ground has been a challenge for parts of Argentina due to wet weather. A little less than half of Argentina's corn has been planted. Typically, two-thirds of the crop is already in the ground. Now, a long stretch of completely dry weather would be helpful in Argentina. A short stretch of completely dry weather is expected from Wednesday through Friday. Then a few scattered showers and thunderstorms may return over the weekend. Next week, a few weather disturbances will likely cause some pockets of rain. So planting progress is expected, but it will remain slow in some areas. In Brazil, there are no major problem areas of note right now. Far northern production areas have had some rain in the past week, benefiting newly planted crops. Just to the south, much of Minas Gerais and a large portion of center-west Brazil have been on the dry side during the past month and could use some rain. None is in the immediate forecast, but the lack of rain is nothing to worry about at this stage. The rainy season does not kick in until the middle of next month. Across southern Brazil and Paraguay, mostly dry weather has prevailed recently, favorable for field work. Some rain is possible across this area over the weekend into early next week. That is your South American weather update. For Commodity Week, I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Wednesday, November the 27th, 2013. Our panelists include Elaine Cubb, Bill Maher, and Matt Bennett. On the phone line from Purdue University in Lafayette, Indiana, is Extension Ag Economist Chris Hurt. Good afternoon to you, Chris. Thank you for taking the time with us. You wrote recently for the Farm Doc Daily website and for your own programming from Purdue Extension about the expansion of livestock, not in this case cattle in particular, but the hog market. Can you tell me some about that, please?
Well, sure. And the kind of reason I wrote that, the topic happened to be hogs, but I really wrote it because we have the need to establish a demand base on corn as well as soybean meal again.
And the point of the article was to say that for those individuals who are already in the hog business, they're going to be selling corn out of this 2013 crop at close to $7 a bushel. Now, again, that's taking the profitability that we're looking at on the hog business over the feeding of the 13 crop and assigning that back to the return that we could get for corn, the bushels of corn we fed. So I think the bottom line, what that tells us is when you get corn down to the levels we've seen, the low $4 level, we really have huge profit incentive. Elaine and all the panel members mentioned this. The profit incentive is very large. There still remains a lot of uncertainty among the livestock producers. Is this going to last? They've been fooled many times before in the last 6 or 7 years. So I think that's another factor that causes them to be a little bit slow to respond. But I think we know the pattern that we're going to see, and the pattern that we see is we get prices low enough to really start to stimulate a demand base. We may bounce along the bottom for a period of time, particularly on these corn prices. But over time, we have to reestablish that demand base, and we have to reestablish that demand base away from ethanol.
Chris, whenever you look at the prices, you know, for next fall for corn and beans, you know, there's been a lot of talk about acreage, and well, you know, I've talked to several guys that are in the seed industry that are a little bit concerned just with guys' interest level in corn on corn, for instance, and just overall corn acreage. What are you looking at for corn acreage moving forward? I know we're a little bit ways away, but do you feel like the economic implications are going to be limiting corn acres to the, you know, 90-91 area?
Yeah, I think there's just not much question about that. I think there's multiple ways to look at that. One of the ways to look at it is we have to get corn acreage down into those levels or you're going to build carryouts. Again, we're assuming fairly normal production for next year. Build carryouts and take corn prices even lower. So I think the questions are, is our production base, this is something we haven't talked about for some time, but our production base is now big enough to meet the demand base that we have. And that says we have to reallocate acres away from corn. Our budgets on average quality Illinois, Indiana farmland is giving us about $50 to $60 higher returns for soybeans right now for 2014. Wheat incentive should have been strong enough to bring more wheat acres. So I think we're in a much different situation than what we've seen. The demand base grew so fast from 2006 crop to the 10 crop, couldn't keep up. And then demand base, particularly for corn, has not been expanding after the 10 crop. It was the short supply on corn that we had, terminating with the very, very low yields in 2013. And that gave the illusion. I still hear people talking about the demand base is growing so much. That's really not the case for corn. So we're going to have to reallocate those acres. Numbers I'm running say we've got to be down in the 90, 91 million acre range to prevent major buildups in corn carryout for 2014 crop.
Chris, we've talked beef expansion and hogs expansion or the potential for those expansion, but this is Thanksgiving week, so I wanted to ask you about turkey. I saw that the turkey consumer demand year on year has been down, and I don't need you to get into the specifics of turkey production, but to what degree does poultry or eggs or dairy, can that be included in your projections for demand for feed grains?
Well, certainly they are in the projections, and I think we'll see up to 4% expansion in the chicken side of the business. Looks like 2 to maybe 3% expansion on the turkeys. And I think we'll be 3, maybe as much as 4% on pork, probably closer to the 3% number. As we look at that whole demand base, the really kicker in there that's the negative is the cattle on feed numbers. And as you've already talked well about, we just have such a small herd, such a small calf crop that's going to be in the feedlots this year. So we're really looking for about 6% less beef, and USDA is using on the beef side almost 9% less animal units on the feeding side. So when you get that big drop on the beef, these other species increasing just give us not a lot of change on the whole animal base. What we are going to see is a higher usage rate. We're going to feed to heavier weights, and we just use more of that corn when we see the prices of corn very low. So I'm not too far off. I think we'll do 5.1, 5.2 billion on the feed side for corn. But Again, we'll have a little more ability to build that base, but we also have to turn not just to domestic livestock feeding, but to exports as well.
Chris, let's shift a little bit to the meat demand side of it. I remember when you were doing a meeting over here for us about a year ago that you had a chart that caught my attention on the per capita consumption of meat in the United States, pretty big decline. Do you see that? I mean, the economic conditions in that, do we see a stabilization of meat demand in the United States particularly?
Yeah, and I think a good point, because I think it's pretty fundamental to what we're going through. I guess what I see is the big decline that we've seen in per capita consumption has really been driven by high feed prices that the livestock poultry industry just could not pay. They reduced production, that made less available supplies. Now what we're going through is certainly a moderation in feed prices. I think we're talking multiple years of lower corn and soybean meal prices. And so my prediction is we're going to see what I call a mini boomlet, some recovery, not as much as we lost in per capita consumption. But we've kind of got three legs for the whole animal industry that we think is very strong demand base going next 3 to 5 years. Per capita consumption in the U.S. increasing somewhat, population growth in the U.S., and the export market looks like it's really wide open for U.S. animal product exports. I think we've got a recovery, and I think we're going to have a better balance between the livestock sector profitability and the grain sector in the next 3 to 5 years.
Chris, you mentioned the reallocation of acreage to away from corn. Do you suppose we will see more wheat acres have been put in the ground across the board this past fall, and how quickly will that happen? Will it need to happen in the fringe areas that have come into corn production, Kansas, South Dakota, some of the other places?
Yeah, I think we will see higher wheat acreage, particularly southern Illinois, southern Indiana, Ohio, Missouri. Double crop wheat and soybeans has really been the go-to crop if you're far enough south where that works. So I think we'll see more acreage there. I'm not sure the Kansas economics very well, that central Great Plains, but I think spring wheat also, if we end up with those normal South American yields and then talking more acreage in the U.S., I think this all says that a lot of pressure on corn and beans both, and we're going to see more spring wheat as well. So we have to do some reallocating. Some of the allocation in the last 5 to 7 years that came out of other crops and went to corn and soybeans, we're going to have to do some reallocating, clearly, mostly out of corn into these other crops.
Chris, thanks for taking the time with us today.
My pleasure.
Chris Hurt, ag economist for Purdue University Extension, joins us from Lafayette, Indiana. Time for a final word from our panelist right here in Champaign, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, I think the time is to get something started on your 2014 marketing. There are a lot of new products out here. You just need to understand them and decide which product you want to start with.
Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska.
Just be keeping an eye on those commitments of traders numbers to see when and if and how the speculators might start unwinding their positions here at the end of the year, and that should probably give a direction through the next few weeks.
And Matt Bennett of Total Grain from Total Grain Marketing, that is, out of Windsor, Illinois.
Yeah, just like producers just not get backed into a corner and have to sell whenever they maybe need the money. And you know, sometimes it's hard not to do that, but have a plan and try to put it into place.
Again, our thanks to Matt Bennett, Elaine Cubb, Bill Mayer, and Chris Hurt. You've been listening to the November 27 recording. That's a Wednesday afternoon edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you can find all of our agricultural programming online at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Have a very good Thanksgiving holiday.